from WABE in Atlanta. This is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thanks for listening. This is our daily look at arts and culture inside and outside of the Atlanta city limits. And today, we're recognizing the work of those who are fighting to keep art accessible to everyone. We'll talk with Monica Campana and Marion Liu of the Living Wall Street Art and Conference. They have their sights set on the walls of Buford Highway, the appropriately named Paint Love organization conducts workshops for at-risk youth and those facing poverty or trauma. But first up, Actors Express takes us to church. Actors Express opens its season with an exploration of religion. The play called The Christians introduces Pastor Paul, who has an eye-opening revelation. The result causes a crisis of faith among his megachurch congregation. I'm joined by Freddie Ashley, who's directing this production. He's also the artistic director of Actors Express. Also here, Brian Kurlander, who plays Pastor Paul. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thank you, Lois. It's great to be here.
It is great to see you again.
Wonderful. So what is Pastor Paul's revelation?
Well, I'd rather leave that for audiences to find out. But I will tell you that Pastor Paul presents a change in philosophy and approach to the spiritual direction of the congregation. And he adopts this belief system in the sincere hope that everybody will jump on board and it will move their congregation forward. And really, the play explores belief and how people come to believe what they believe and how there can be opposing views in belief and people can disagree, but there can be space for one another and how you listen to the other human being and how you listen to what they believe. And it causes a lot of tension and a lot of great dramatic experiences within the play. And that's what's so exciting about it. Right now, to be doing this play right now at this time in our country's history, I think is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, it sounds very hopeful, perhaps, or guardedly optimistic that if there is space, we can be different and listen to each other.
And, you know, what a great thing to experience at this moment in our time when we're probably as divided as we've been in many generations. And it seems that people have lost the ability to disagree with that sort of mutual respect. And so to see this story about people who are deeply, deeply good people of conscience, disagreeing, but trying to make that space for respect and coexistence is very moving.
Freddie, I think it's remarkable that this begins your 30th anniversary season, doesn't
That's
it?
That's right, yes.
Never one to shy away from controversy, or maybe that's not fair. Always one willing to take on what's not necessarily easy to discuss. Here you've chosen a play about religion and something that could be very divisive. Why did you want to start this season with this?
Precisely because the play isn't divisive. The play presents people who have discovered these distances between themselves in terms of belief, but it's about how they're trying to fill that distance and fill that space with understanding. And so I think it's odd that in our current climate that is considered subversive. But I guess in a way it is. It's a little dangerous, I think, sometimes to try to make space for someone who is so fundamentally opposed to our own position or our own belief. And yet I think that that's the only way forward.
Hmm. It's interesting that one man can have so much power over a congregation's faith. Brian Plang, Pastor Paul, have you thought a lot about power?
Power, influence, shepherding have all been words that have come up for me as I've gone through this process and researched the topics and looked at other pastors around the country and how they lead their congregations, particularly those congregations that are, you know, fairly large, you know, thousands of congregants coming every day, and the influence that they have with their message to their congregants about how to live your life and how to move forward every day and how to put your best self into the world. And I think Pastor Paul is doing that in this play, but the fascinating, wonderful thing about it is when you have these two opposing or seemingly opposing philosophies that are going to come and ram into each other, it can be incredibly explosive, incredibly divisive, and yet the playwright here has given everyone access into this play, whether you are a person of faith or you are a person who is agnostic, it doesn't matter. There is a opening for you to hear something in this play, and it's not a proselytizing message, I think, that the playwright is giving. He's giving space for everyone and their systems of belief without ever losing that tension between the opposing views.
Freddie, there may be people who aren't familiar with the mega churches or what they do. I have to confess that, you know, aside from what I have seen occasionally on television, which frightens me, I'm not familiar. I mean, there's a man who I believe, at least he calls himself a minister, and he sells little healing water, you know, that,
oh,
you know, preaching to people who can't walk, that if you buy this jar of water for $2, you will be able to walk. I knew an elderly woman who had been deaf for years who would send away checks to someone like that. I think she thought because then God would restore her hearing. Is there nuance? Is there a great variety of mega churches?
Absolutely. In fact, I think there are quite a few people in the sort of, I guess, mega church scene that have given it a bad name. And I think you would find within mega churches quite a variety of approaches. Mega churches tend to have very diverse congregations, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Yes. Much more so than more mainline denominations. But I think what's interesting about the play is that all of that is not really present. I mean, there are issues of money in the play, and there are some questions about the church getting paid off and that sort of thing. But what the playwright is very careful to construct is a pastor who is a deeply ethical person and a person of great conscience, and that all of the people around him are also trying to do the right thing for the community of the church family. And so, you know, I do think a lot of people will bring in preconceived notions about what that looks like, but the playwright offers some author's notes to theaters who are producing the play, you know, saying, you know, avoid choices in the play that will make it seem like satire. This is not satire. This is not a critique. This is a sensitive, thoughtful exploration of how faith motivates people and how faith motivates people differently.
Hmm. You know, Freddie, what you said, I find that interesting because I'm so excited for audiences with preconceived notions to come to this place. And I don't care what the preconceived notion is. I'm excited because the play itself is such a powerful example of what is possible inside a certain conversation. And I know that people are going to walk away from this production with a lot to talk about. And that's exciting.
Paul. Pastor Paul.
I'm in character. I'm staying in character.
And that's what I was about to ask you, Brian. How did you get into character for Pastor Paul?
Well, I had the luxury of getting this script about 6-8 weeks ahead of our first rehearsal. So I spent a lot of time researching pastors of large congregations all around the country, spoke to a number of religious leaders, and just listened mainly for the message that they were delivering to their congregants and how they were delivering that message, and looking for those people with a certain kind of integrity, that their belief system was rooted in something that was going to make the lives of their congregants better, regardless of what their particular religious perspective was, you know, and keep an open mind for that. And then come to the play with the same compassion and understanding and open-heartedness that I think the playwright has put on the page.
Freddie, who are some of the other characters in the production, and what are some of the crises they experience?
Well, we meet a church elder who is on the board of the church and is concerned about the impact that all of this will have on the health of the church as an organization. There's an associate pastor who does find himself at odds from a sort of doctrinal point of view with the pastor's new direction. We have a congregant who is a young single mother who is really torn because she's deeply committed to the church, and the church has seen her through quite a few tough times. And perhaps most importantly, the wife of the pastor who is struggling to understand this new direction as well, not only from a religious point of view, but also from the point of view of this being something of a surprise to her, that she's trying to understand how could you have evolved to believe something so different than what I believe, and how do we now know each other? What is our way forward? And so you really hit these different conflicts from so many different directions and on so many different layers.
If you're just joining us, this is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzis, here with Freddie Ashley, the Artistic Director of Actors Express. He's joined by Brian Kurlander, who plays Pastor Paul in the upcoming production of The Christians. We'll be back after a short break.
Support for WABE comes from Reliable Heating and Air, a Trane dealer, a family company since 1978, offering heating and air, plumbing, electrical, and duct cleaning 24 hours a day. Learn more at reliableair.com. And from Comcast Business. Comcast is building a gig speed network providing small businesses across the country with the opportunity to dream gig. Learn more at dreamgig.com. Comcast Business, built for business.
You are listening to City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzis, here with actor Brian Kurlander and director Freddie Ashley. We're talking about Actors Express, upcoming production of The Christians, which opens next week. Are either of you religious?
I am, yes. And I don't know what it says about me that people are often surprised to find that out.
Well, no, that may be a good thing, because perhaps people who may associate being religious with being strict or rigid don't see that when they see you, Freddie.
I think that that's probably an understatement.
And yet. You are.
Yes.
And as a Christian.
Yes.
Okay.
And a Methodist, in fact. And it's interesting, when I first saw this play, I was sitting next to a friend of mine who's an atheist, and I thought it was such a great moment. When the play was over, we sort of simultaneously turned to each other with our chins in our laps, and we both at the same time said, "Wow." Mm. And I remember in that moment thinking, wow, this is such a great piece of theater, that she and I are coming to it from completely opposite experiences relative to the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we both had this profound experience. It was really a powerful moment for me.
How about you, Brian? Are you religious?
You know, I do go to worship service, and I have throughout my life periodically, and I have a number of very, very close friends who are spiritual mentors of mine from a variety of different faith backgrounds. I am a believer in that which is eternal. And that guides me in my particular faith, and it leaves me open-hearted to those around me who have a variety of different faith journeys.
Which ideally religion should do. It should breed tolerance and open-mindedness.
Well, and an understanding that everyone formulates their understanding of the universe differently, and how we encounter the eternal, how we encounter the infinite. It's going to be different for a lot of people, sometimes within the doctrines of a particular religion and sometimes without. And I think that's actually something that is deep in the heart of the play. Brian referenced earlier this question about why we believe what we believe. That's a very personal question that's going to be different for every single human being that walks the earth. And I think that it's important that we do what we can as fellow humans to make the space for each other to do that.
Yeah, from my background, there's an expression to heal the world.
This is Jewish.
Yes.
Yes,
right. And so that tikkun olam, to heal the world, is what drives me. So although I'm not in a weekly go to services routine, my experience of faith happens in the community, and how you give yourself over to your community and how you're of service to your community.
And shaping values. Producing plays about religion can get a lot of heat. This is nothing new. Are there any elements that people have called offensive about this play?
You know, not to my knowledge, actually. I have not found that this play has engendered a lot of controversy. It's been produced around the country. In fact, I would think it's one of the more widely produced plays at the moment. It was such a big hit in New York. I think there is always maybe an expectation of controversy, because when you're dealing with religion, you never know where the conversation is going to go with people. Mm-hmm. I think that most people have encountered this play and have found their own way into it.
Hmm. You're a believer, Freddie.
I am. Dyed in the wool.
I'm telling you. The story is set in a mega church, as we mentioned. Does the audience feel like it's in a church service?
Yes. In fact, the first thing that happens in the play is the pastor says, you know, let's bow our heads in prayer. And the playwright has said that in many theaters around the country, audience members will instinctively bow their heads as if they were in a service. Many don't also, which is also fine, but it's interesting to, again, see how different people encounter that. The structure of the play is it's very rooted in a service, a sort of, we begin with the call to worship, and all of the action takes place right there on the altar. Even as the play moves through time and space, the actors never leave the visual world of the church. And so there's a sort of arch theatricality to it, which I think is also interesting and keeps it tied into the world that it's depicting.
In just the minute we have left, what do you hope audiences take away from this?
I hope that people are moved. I hope that people are able to confront their own beliefs and will be more inclined to give those around them the space to have theirs as well.
We've been talking with Actors Express Artistic Director Freddie Ashley, who is also directing their opening 30th season production of The Christians. We are also joined by actor Brian Kurlander, who is Pastor Paul. The Christians opens next week, September 16th, and runs through October 15th. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having us, Lois.
Thank you, and amen.
Support for WABE comes from the Bremen Museum, presenting Bearing Witness, Remarkable Stories from the Holocaust, featuring Hank Lewin telling the story of his parents, Nora and Joel. Admission is complimentary, Sunday, September 10th at 2 p.m. More at thebremen.org. And from Emory's Winship Cancer Institute. They offer treatments years before anyone else, and experts specialize in specific cancer types. If it's cancer, Winship at Emory appointments are available at emoryhealthcare.org/cancer.
This is City Lights on WABE, where ATL meets NPR. Art is therapeutic. That's the guiding principle of Paint Love, a nonprofit here in town that connects artists with kids. The artists conduct workshops through nonprofits or schools with youth who are facing poverty or trauma. I spoke with Paint Love's founder, Julianne McKevitt, and one of their volunteer artists, Ellen Gadberry, about the organization. Here's Julie talking about what motivated her to start Paint Love.
In 2013, I became a professional artist, and at that point, I wanted some part of what I did to bring back to kids and to bring art to kids. And I was invited by an organization called Wellspring Living, and they rescue girls out of sex trafficking in Atlanta. And I was invited to come and teach an art class with them and a couple other artists. And it was such a neat experience because the girls were wonderful. They just latched onto the projects and created these amazing, beautiful pieces. And the staff were like, wow, we had no idea they could do that. And it was just one of those things where they're like, come back, we want more. And at that point, they didn't have the resources to bring in more artists or to pay for supplies. And there were a lot of artists that didn't know about organizations like Wellspring. And so I think that's when the light bulb of Paint Love came on, of what if there was someone in the middle who could find artists and could match them to organizations that were in need, like Wellspring, and had these youth that could be served through art. And just the name of Paint Love kind of fit it perfectly.
Ellen is one of those artists
connected.
Yes,
she's fabulous.
How does it work? How do you find your partners, or I guess how do they find you, and what makes a good fit?
We find our partners and our artists in lots of different avenues. I was lucky enough to paint on the Beltline, and the year I painted, I pretty much recruited all the artists around me and said, come on board, we're doing this new thing. But someone like Ellen, and I'll let Ellen kind of step in and talk of how she found us, but are people who believe in what we do and believe, we're a group of artists, we're not therapists, but we believe that art is incredibly therapeutic. And at this point we work with both Title I schools and nonprofits. And we have a waiting list from both those organizations. So they're finding us a lot of word of mouth. And then we kind of pair artists on what of what they like and what they need, they want to work with the organizations of what they're looking for to serve their kids.
So what have been some of your experiences?
Yeah, my name is Ellen Gadberry, and I'm a former DeKalb County teacher and a current family literacy advocate and community artist. And my work is primarily with paper and paper in numerous forms, including paper making. And because of my classroom background, I think anything that I enjoy doing, I am inclined to find groups to enjoy doing it with me. And but I've done a number of paper making projects with different groups through Paint Love. We did one recently with the Atlanta Center for Child Advocacy that supports children who have been affected by abuse of various types. And like all of us, they have stories to tell and wounds to heal and ways in which art experiences will be therapeutic. As Julie says, we're not therapists, but what I think any artist will tell you is that creative expression, artistic activity, reaches a part of ourselves that we don't always get to other ways. And so to be with a group of children or adults or whoever the group may be, but in this case, we had an especially meaningful experience when we got together with this group of kids. We gave them scrap paper, paper that would have come out of the recycling and probably did, and we asked them to write down a truth on that piece of paper and then to tear it into tiny, tiny pieces. And we reminded them that even though no one could ever read what they had written, that information was still there, and we could turn that information into something beautiful. And we took those bits of paper and put them in a blender with water, so whizzed it on, which is great fun. You know, kids don't get to use blenders all the time. So right there, you've got everybody's full attention. And then we pour that pulp through a screen in a mold, and I have a technique whereby we dry those circles of paper, and then we create flowers out of those. And so that truth is embedded in that flower, but that truth has also become something beautiful. It's a very physical act. It's very tactile. It's very experiential, and we can imbue meaning as appropriate, or keep it lighthearted. So I think that that's probably one of the beautiful things that goes on in Paint Love activities, is that the sensitivity and the big hearts of the artists who work with the organization, paired with people who are identified as a group for some reason, but are just human beings like all of us looking for expression, opportunity to express themselves, has made for a good match.
The experiences that the kids had, you mentioned this advocacy group was largely for children who've experienced domestic abuse. And Julie, you talked about kids who had been involved, abducted, forced into sex trafficking. These are horrific things these children have lived through.
Yeah.
And you say you aren't therapists, but have you seen in any of the artwork these kids have created any subjects that have just stunned you speechless?
Yeah, it's opened up some really honoring opportunities for conversation in some of the works we had. One of the first groups I worked with, a girl was drawing a picture. And it was a flower. And she brought it up to me, and we started talking about flowers. And then she started talking about how it reminded her of her mother and that she lost her mother. And I told her that I had lost my mother as well. And it was just that moment of connection of, you know, through art, of drawing something as simple as a flower and how that can mean something so much. And and then having an opportunity to talk about your art with someone else, I think, is really significant and important.
But you effectively are there to bring some beauty into their lives.
Yes.
The angle you take is not to try and extract from them the trauma of their experience.
Right.
That's where the art therapists come in.
Exactly.
Right. Ellen, would you talk about what the artist gets out of the experience?
Wow. Like I say, art for me is a opportunity for it's a spiritual practice. It reaches into me at a level that's different than other ways of being in this world. And I think that the opportunity to be creative, to express oneself creatively, does that for the children and adults that I've facilitated art experiences with. So to answer your question, what does the artist get out of this? The satisfaction of seeing people feed that part of themselves that might be sort of perpetually hungry or perpetually a little bit starved, even in this busy world where we don't always get to stop and contemplate color and shape and line and creative problem solving and aesthetics and all of those things that sort of come together as a child creates whatever that finished piece is. I guess too, it's all about process.
I do volunteer too, teach. One of the first things I heard from artists was, "This is exactly what I've been looking for," and we found that there are so many generous, amazing artists in Atlanta. I mean, for me, walking away with, I mean, I feel like I feel as good as the kids, maybe better. But I mean, seeing the looks on their faces when they see that they can create something they didn't think they could create is fabulous. I got a thank you note from a girl once who said, you know, thank you for pushing me to create this. She said, I didn't think I could, but I love it. And that's, you know, we balance this line of coming in and kind of facilitating and being beside them and pushing them a little bit too to create something, to learn something about themselves. And that's a beautiful part for an artist, for me personally, to see that happen.
I congratulate you on these achievements. The number of lives you've touched in just a few years is very impressive.
Thank you so much.
Julianne McKevitt is the founder of Paint Love. Ellen Gadbury is one of their volunteer artists. Paint Love's art auction is next month on October 19th at Monday Night Brewing's West End location.
This is City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thanks for joining us. We Love Bew High started out as an Instagram account to capture the stories of people living and working on Buford Highway. Now it's a much larger initiative under founder Marion Liu. She's now approaching Buford Highway as an urban planner. Marion found a partner in Monica Campana, who runs Living Walls. That's the festival and conference that brings street artists to Atlanta to create community-driven murals. And this year's conference is all about Buford Highway. I spoke with both Marion and Monica about how their organizations align and what to expect at this year's Living Walls. Here's Monica.
Both of us are seeking for representation. Marion is definitely doing it through photos and the Instagram account and the initiatives that Will of Bew High has, like tours. But it was all about presenting the immigrant community that lives in Metro Atlanta the right way. You know, I was trying to do the same thing with public art. The lack of representation for artists of color or women is very minimal in the street art world. And, you know, in the conversations that we had when we first met, the both of us were just looking for that one project that would allow us to hand the mic to people that oftentimes don't get to be you know, in this position and tell their own story without having anybody else tell it for themselves. It kind of just made sense.
This year, instead of putting up artwork all around the city, it's all focused on Buford Highway. What is the concept behind the main installation?
The concept behind the installations is really storytelling, but in a very visual, very bold way. A lot of times when you go to Buford Highway, you don't see culture so much. You see signage. You see different languages and different signs for restaurants and stores, but it's really hard to get a sense of that unless you actually walk into each store. And then it's also, there's no one translating for you, so it's hard to understand unless you're with someone who knows Buford Highway very well. And so what we're trying to do is to use art to also encourage people to do more exploration. It's inviting people to come and look around and then explore in their own ways.
And this is presented, this installation is presented as a walk, isn't it?
Yeah. So actually, Marian can talk more about that. When we met and we were already talking about creating a project, a public art project in Buford Highway, Marian was finishing a research project, an LCI research project.
Yeah, so the LCI is, it's a Atlanta Regional Commission program. It's the Livable Centers Initiative. And the ARC provides funding sort of as a match to cities, community improvement districts, these entities that can provide some funding. The ARC provides a match. And then there's usually like a master plan or a transportation study done for communities. So Chamblee and Doraville together sponsored a joint Livable Centers Initiative study for Buford Highway. And so the Buhai Walk, which is, you know, you asked about the concept, the Buhai Walk is one of the recommendations from that plan. So using art and installations to create a more safer and more inviting pedestrian alternative sidewalk to the sidewalks of Buford Highway, which are often, you know, not in the best condition or non-existent.
Yes, and certainly even if you are walking mm-hmm. along Buford Highway, cars are just mm-hmm. whipping along. I mean, you know, whizzing by.
Yeah.
So how does your installation, how does the Buhai Walk address that?
So the Buhai Walk is a concept, and it's going to require a lot more than just one, you know, a lot more than just this project. We envision the Buhai Walk stretching throughout Brookhaven, Chamblee, and Doraville. You know, our big, you know, dream for it is that it would connect the shopping centers through informal pedestrian paths. And you do see informal pedestrian paths on Buford Highway where people have basically carved out a walking path just through repeated walking over it. You know, when there's no sidewalk, when people walk, they're called desire paths. So what we would love to do is to use art, strategically placed art, to encourage more of the walking, more safer walking through the plazas, connecting the plazas to each other.
I think the goal is to create art that's strategically placed to bring attention to, you know, those challenges that have become, that can be opportunities for the corridor. For example, we do have two murals that are right next to each other in two different plazas. And to get from one to the other, technically there's no sidewalk, but there is one. There's one that people that walk that area made themselves. And so when we take them on a tour to see this one mural and the other, we're going to have to make people walk through this sidewalk. So it's really, like, the art's there. It's a really big component of it, is the representation of the stories and the people that make Buford Highway that oftentimes are not, you know, represent it properly, but it's also a way for people to pay attention to, you know, the challenges that people that live here face. It is not a safe corridor. It is very rich in culture. I met some of the most incredible people in Buford Highway, but they have to deal with a highway that's extremely unsafe.
Indeed.
So,
You mentioned two murals. Tell us some more about the work of this year's featured artist.
Yeah, one of the most exciting things for me is the work the artists have been putting in the project. Each of them was paired with a community organization and different community groups to engage in different ways, like meetings, workshops, to get to know the community better. One of our artists, Diana Settles, she's the daughter of Vietnamese parents, and she did a series of workshops with the girls from Athena's Warehouse, which is a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to empower young girls from Beaufort Highway. And Diana is a printmaker, and so she brought all of her equipment to the place that they were meeting, and through art, you know, they started to discuss what it meant for these young girls to be not just an immigrant in this country, but maybe an undocumented immigrant in this country, and maybe a young girl undocumented and an immigrant in this country. And they created scenes where they talk about the diversity in the midst of adversity. And she took all of those stories and she used those as the inspiration for the mural that she's going to create. So it's the artist's art, but it is, I feel like each artist was challenged in a completely different way where they had to, it wasn't just like an interview session, you know, like I'm going to interview these people and like get to know what they're all about, but it was about really trying to understand where they're coming from. And it was, I think, a very humbling experience for all of them.
What is the international representation among the artists?
All of the artists are artists of color. Some of them are immigrants. Some of them are children of immigrants. There's also a big focus on women and also queer artists. So I think that we try to involve as many different voices as we could in this project, because just like the artists, the corridor, Beaufort Highway is extremely diverse. And not just culturally, but in every kind of way.
Economically,
yeah. It's been really interesting. And for me, it's been, I will continue to say this, there's not a perfect way to do public art and engage community, you know, in that this is the format and this is how you do it, because people are complex and they're so full of rich stories. Beaufort Highway proved this to me this time around. We have been 3 months in the making of just community engagement, and I feel like I need more time. There are so many people, so many different stories to highlight. So.
And yet you are going to have a conference element, aren't you?
Yes, in a day.
What are some of the conversations you hope to have at the conference?
So, you know, Monica was saying how this is a new way of doing community engagement for public art. And for me, it's also a new way of doing community engagement for city planning. I feel like, you know, when I moved to Brookhaven and I went to community meetings and town halls, there was never any significant representation from the communities that live and work on Beaufort Highway. And this is, I think, just a challenge for planners throughout this country, and anywhere when you have processes that are difficult for people to access if they don't have language capacity, if they don't have time, if they don't have an understanding of our civic processes. Like, this is really, how do we do community engagement in a new way? So, like, I think it's really this both, it's transformative, I think, for street art. I think it's transformative for cities that do have a significant immigrant population, particularly immigrant communities that are facing the threat and the challenge of gentrification and displacement. So those are definitely some of the topics that we want to talk about. Also, Beaufort Highway is known, obviously, for the food and the cuisines and what you can eat. And we also want to talk about how immigrant communities often, you know, the hospitality industry, whether that is working in hotels or whether that is working in the back of the house in restaurants. Like, immigrant labor is such a fundamental part of our economy that we want to talk about that. We want to talk about cultural appropriation. We want to talk about some really big issues, I think, that Beaufort Highway faces, or the people of Beaufort Highway face a lot of these issues, particularly now, particularly like right now with the rescission of DACA. And these are really, really heavy issues, really devastating in many ways. So I think that this event and this project is very timely. And we hope that, you know, we can have a really thought-provoking conversation about the significance of communities like Beaufort Highway, and also how do we move forward together.
So this is really art and social change. You mentioned the critical time and timing of the festival as developers are turning their sights on Beaufort Highway. How do you think public art advocates for preservation?
I think that being able to put the stories in the faces of the people that, you know, are the reason to why people are paying attention to the area to begin with, you know, to put them right there, it's already doing something. People have an idea, you know, this is where the immigrant population of Atlanta or the biggest concentration of immigrant communities live, but people don't know, you know, the stories. And I think that once we start painting those walls with those incredible, beautiful faces, it could be a way of, like, creating a shield. I've been talking about this shield, and, like, how do we protect? How do we make people stop and think about it twice, you know, because there's people and families that live here.
Yeah, I really think that this public art and seeing yourself in your community is a really powerful motivating factor for community building. And it's an affirmation of our diversity. I think in Atlanta's the birthplace of the civil rights movement. What does that mean today? What does that mean for a community like Beaufort Highway to be such an integral part of Atlanta's story, Atlanta's identity? And I really feel like this is a really powerful moment for us, for the communities that we're a part of. I'm second generation. Monica's first generation immigrant. And I think that it's always been really beautiful hearing Monica talk about when she came to Atlanta, like she didn't feel like there was, like she didn't have a place. Like she didn't see herself in the in her public spaces here in Atlanta. And part of Living Walls is creating a space for people who don't see themselves in their community. And I think even, you know, we have two murals up right now. I really feel like it can be a galvanizing force for creating a stronger sense of community on Beaufort Highway among our immigrant communities, and also to tie them to what Atlanta represents to the world, I think.
Marian Liu and Monica Campana, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Monica Campana is the founder and executive director of Living Walls. Marian Liu is the founder of We Love Beau High. The Living Walls artists start painting today, and the conference is next weekend.
Support for WABE comes from Rosie's Roofing and Restoration, committed to keeping you cozy and dry regardless of the weather. Rosie's Roofing and Restoration, there when you need us, online at rosiesroofing.com. And from Zoo Atlanta, presenting Sippin' Safari on Saturday, September 23rd, featuring an evening of wine sampling, live music, and more for ages 21 and up. Tickets and information available at zooatlanta.org.
I'm Kimberly Harbrecht with AtlantaPlanet.org, and today we're looking at festivals happening this weekend. Stone Mountain Park is home to the Yellow Daisy Festival Thursday through Sunday. It's one of the top arts and crafts festivals in the Southeast, with more than 400 artists. Now, that's outside, but there's also the indoor flower show at the park's Memorial Hall. This weekend's also the third annual Marietta Film Festival. Films come from around the world, including the U.S., Nepal, and England. And it's all happening at the Strand Theater, which is right on the Marietta Square. And Saturday is the Atlanta Beltline Parade. It's an annual nighttime event that kicks off the Beltline's art series. If you've never seen it before, the parade walks the East Side Trail beginning around 8:30 p.m. And everyone in the parade is holding a lighted lantern. And you can make your own lantern and walk in the parade, or just find a place along the route to watch it walk by. There are more events like these happening every day around Metro Atlanta. You can find them all at AtlantaPlanIt.org.
You've been listening to City Lights, a celebration of the arts and the ways in which we express ourselves creatively. Catch an encore broadcast tonight at 8. Tune in Sunday evening at 7, when we'll talk with the stars and subject of the film Crown Heights, the true story of Colin Warner, who was wrongfully imprisoned for 21 years. Monday morning at 11, we'll be joined by pianist and Emory University professor Will Ransom. He'll be in to talk about the 25th anniversary season of the Emory Chamber Music Society. Our producers are Aaron Wright, Gabby Watts, and Mike Johns. Our engineer is Kevin Rinker. WABE's MVP of radio is Christine Dempsey. And I'm Lois Reitzes. Follow me on Twitter at Lois Reitzes. That's spelled LOISREITZES. The station is at WABE News. Thanks so much for joining us and for listening to member-supported 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. Have a safe weekend.